The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Boker tov, shavua tov. On Friday, we had a strange event where sirens sounded on the north border, on the northern border. All the areas around the Lebanese border had their sirens sounded. They were told to go into their protective shelters. It turns out that what triggered this siren was a UAV. It was one of these drones that apparently were sent over by Hamas, by Hezbollah in the case of Lebanon. Apparently, this particular drone even had a name. It was called Hassan, and the drone was sent over the border from Lebanon into Israeli territory. It triggered the sirens. It also caused one of the Iron Dome units in the region, in that northern region, to fire a missile in order to try to bring this particular drone down. We understand that the missile that was fired did not succeed in bringing this drone down, and that the drone was actually able to return back to Lebanon quite safely. This was confirmed by the IDF, and it was also mentioned by Hezbollah, the fact that they managed, according to the Hezbollah statement, to allow the drone a reconnaissance mission of about 40 minutes. That's what Hezbollah have stated, inside Israeli territories, covering something like 70 kilometers into Israeli territory. So I'm not exactly sure what the consequences of that could be. But again, it's just evidence of the type of warfare that we're fighting. It's not what we used to think groups of soldiers lining up against each other, groups of tanks, platoons lining up against each other, firing. These days, warfare is being conducted even in so-called peaceful sort of situation where reconnaissance missions are being flown, and potentially that drone could also have been a weapon-carrying drone. So we just think about not only the intelligence that they might have gathered, but the fact that it could also have been caused risk to people, and all at almost zero risk to the opposing side. And of course, this is one of the reasons why the IDF is using drones so much, because the risk to the IDF personnel is very, very minimal. It gives us amazing views. We can see things from a certain distance and from a certain height, which gives an entirely different perspective. And where required, these drones can even carry weapons. So this is the new world in which we live.
Very, very frightening. There are concerns that the negotiations with Iran could lead to an agreement. That sounds strange, saying there are concerns that it could lead to an agreement, because in fact we should hope for an agreement, in theory.
Well, it depends what sort of an agreement.
Absolutely.
And we have some sort of an idea of what is currently on the table in Vienna, which could quite conceivably be agreed upon during the course of this week. And Prime Minister Naftali Bennett spoke out last week saying that this particular agreement that's on the table will spell more violence for the region, will boost the Iranian regime, potential attacks on Israel, and is a much, much weaker and much more concerning agreement than even the first Iranian agreement, the Iranian nuclear agreement, which was signed a few years ago, and that was cause for major concern in Israel. There were three things that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett mentioned that are of major concern in the agreement that is apparently on the table now, and from what we can understand, is pretty much almost a done deal. The first thing he says is that there is the sunset clause, which within a space of 2.5 years will have all bets off, will allow Iran effectively to do almost as it pleases, and not be restricted by the agreement. So this agreement that we're talking about, in the terms of this agreement, appear only to be in place for the next 2.5 years, after which Iran seems to be free legally and by agreement do practically whatever it wants. But during the first 2.5 years, during which time Iran is theoretically restricted, it seems as if though Iran could get almost onto the brink of having sufficient material to produce a nuclear weapon. And that is of major concern, because as soon as the 2.5 years are up, obviously they will just take that one next step that's required in order to produce the nuclear weapon, and all with agreement within the by the international community, though. So that seems very, very strange and very, very threatening indeed. The second point that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett mentioned about the agreement is the fact that Iran is insisting upon closing all the open files that are currently open with the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA. There are a number of so-called hot investigations with possible military dimensions that are open at the moment with the International Atomic Energy Agency due to the fact that they have been denied the right to investigate certain areas and due to the fact that certain agreed information has been withheld from them. So they've opened these hot investigations. Now the agreement is saying that these investigations will simply be closed without any further investigation. So effectively sweeping all of the misdemeanors, all of the transgressions that the Iranian regime has committed over the past few years, just simply sweeping them under the carpet and not even acknowledging that those exist. So there's been a whole host of activities that have gone on, which are way beyond what the nuclear agreement allowed for, which the International Atomic Energy Agency has opened investigations into these. And now the agreement seems to be sweeping all of this simply under the carpet. The third and also very, very concerning element of this agreement is the fact, of course, that the international community will allow a lot of money, billions of US dollars, to be poured into the Iranian economy, will not only allow that money to be poured into the Iranian economy, but will indeed even source a lot of that money under the terms of this agreement. And so the Iranian economy, which is currently on the verge of collapse as a result of the weak rial, the Iranian currency, and as a result of lack of foreign currency coming into the country, will now be boosted as a result of this flow of currency, will strengthen the regime, will give them all that they need, not only to develop more the Iranian nuclear program, but indeed to potentially fund a renegade groups that they have operating around the world, many of them operating against Israel. So all of this is highly concerning for Israel. I mean, to put it in the very, very polite and understated terms, this is a real threat. And no wonder that the countries, particularly in the Gulf, are very enthusiastic about trying to team up with Israel in some way to prevent this.
It's such a worry because it's hard to picture another route that this is going to go other than a military route.
And in fact, when Prime Minister Naftali Bennett spoke last week about the terms of this agreement, all of which sound so negative. I mean, I can't imagine having anything positive to say when you couch the agreement in these terms and describe those facts. But interestingly, he was speaking to leaders from the USA, Jewish leaders from the USA, at a meeting in Jerusalem, and he was quite optimistic at the end, ironically, by saying that Israel will prevail, that there are plans to counter this. I don't really know what plans he is talking about, but I agree with you, Howard, that it seems as if though it's enormously difficult to imagine how Israel might be able to counter this particular agreement without a military option. Having said that, you know, at the start of our chat, we spoke about the new world in which we live and the new strategies that are being deployed, new tactics that are being used for warfare. We've seen Israel deploy these in Iran, if we believe all of the stories, the mysterious deaths of so many of the nuclear scientists, the mysterious, you know, Iran check your mezuzah stories about strange fires that break out unexpectedly and people that, you know, senior people that meet an untimely death or have these strange accidents, events that take place in Iranian ports that are used for the import and export of goods, and of course the fires that constantly break out within very, very secret areas that are connected to the nuclear program, not to speak of the whole capture of the information that then Prime Minister Netanyahu was very proud to present to the international community, all the files that were captured from Iran. So clearly Israel is very, very active indeed. The question is all of that enough? And, you know, the way that things look at the moment, it seems that though something has really got to step up a level in order to counter what seems to be on the brink of happening.
Yeah, it's well, it's probably likely to play out relatively soon, given the fact that the agreement could take place this week. But we will certainly keep an eye on it. Visitors are due to be allowed into Israel without restrictions starting from next week. That is wonderful news.
I knew that you'd like to hear that, and I'm sure that many people listening out there would also like to hear this. There was some discussion about whether unvaccinated children would be limited to only those under the age of 12. So there was some talk about saying, look, if people are under the, children are under the age of 12, not being vaccinated, they will be allowed in freely. But between the ages of 12 and 18, children would be expected to be vaccinated to come to Israel. There was some discussion around that particular idea. In the end, it was shelved, and we understand now that there will be no vaccination requirement at all for any visitors of any age to come to Israel. That is the current plan that was announced yesterday and which is due to come into effect on the 1st of March, which is next week, very, very soon indeed. And it's all about trying to encourage tourism back again. I know that there's been a somewhat tenuous relationship between the Israeli government and the diaspora Jewish community in general, and in particular, South African Chief Rabbi Warren Goldstein has spoken out very, very strongly about the way that Jews in the diaspora have felt at the time that Israel decided to close its borders. I'd like just to reiterate again and hope that people, Rabbi Goldstein and others, will understand that this is not about a personal vendetta against Jews in the diaspora. This is all about trying to protect Israelis and trying somehow to slow down the spread of the pandemic. But I think it is very nice to come to a moment when we say, please, will you all come back and come and visit us? The only requirement will be that you will be required to have a PCR test before you get on the plane when you leave your country of origination, a negative test, obviously, and you will be required to have your PCR test upon landing in Israel, which will be undertaken in the airport, whether you like it or not. And at your cost, don't forget that that PCR test in Israel doesn't come for free, even though they force you to do it. It has a cost associated with it, but it's relatively quick and easy. And my experience of it is that it flows pretty well, and you get your results relatively quickly. You are not allowed out of the airport until you've had your test. That's the way that things work right now. So from next week, welcome back to Israel.
Amazing.
Everybody, you know, now's the time to make your plans to come and visit. And there is talk about even lifting the restriction of face masks inside, in indoor areas, potentially before Pesach. That has yet to be confirmed. But at the moment, there is some talk about the possibility of lifting the restrictions of face masks before Pesach comes in. And of course, as we've already discussed, Pesach this year is very late, so they have some time yet to decide. One of the other things that's been discussed and I think agreed upon now is the fact that this twice weekly test that is being undertaken by school children, this is an antigen test that all school children are required to take. Apparently, that is due to be phased out as well, which will be much relief to the school children, to the parents, and particularly to the schools who've had to police all of this. You know, I think that we're really trying to get back to what we remember the situation being before COVID. But of course, the Prime Minister and the Minister of Health have both warned, saying that if a new variant arises, which requires us to pull the strings back again and to tighten up the restrictions, then we will not hesitate to do so. So, in the meantime, now's a good time to plan for your trips to Israel, to for Pesach, and to come after Pesach. It would be great to have tourists back again.
Absolutely right. And before I let you go, let's just talk about the United Nations, Israel refusing to cooperate.
Yeah, so this is a new commission of inquiry that has been appointed by the United Nations. Nobody is surprised by that particular idea. And of course, this comes mostly under the Human Rights Council, which has a reputation over the years for being very, very anti-Israeli. Interestingly, this particular new commission of inquiry has been appointed in order to investigate again the so-called war crimes connected with the recent Gaza war that took place during last year. And the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations international institutions, Meirav Elon Shachar, has said that not only will this commission contribute towards polarization between Israelis and Palestinians, but it won't bring anything of benefit at all to the discussion, to the topic, to whatever is required here in terms of what they're trying to investigate. Mm. And so Israel has decided it won't cooperate with this particular inquiry. Interestingly, the inquiry comes under the leadership of a former South African, and she has really strong anti-Israeli credentials, having been involved with the United Nations Human Rights Council for the longest time. Her name is Pele, that's her surname at least, and she is leading this particular commission of inquiry. Navi Pele is her name, and of course she has long been an anti-Israeli advocate. She was involved with the Goldstone Commission at its time. She's been long involved with the United Nations Human Rights Council. There are petitions that have been made available online for people to sign up to in order to express their opposition to the appointment of this particular commission inquiry. The problem is that something like $4 million has been budgeted to allow this commission of inquiry to operate indefinitely. And as Foreign Minister, $4 million and 18 staff members have been allocated to this particular effort, whereas, as Foreign Minister Yair Lapid says, in Syria, 500,000 people have been killed. There was a war for 12 years. The budget for that inquiry is $2.5 million and 12 members of staff. So this kind of gives you an idea of how this stacks
up. It's actually embarrassing for the United Nations. It's unbelievable, and yet they don't see it.
They don't see it, and of course Navi Pillay is in exactly where she likes to be, which is castigating Israel. So it's hardly surprising that Israel's not cooperating. I don't know where this is going to go, really. If you want to have your say, you know, sign up to the petitions. I'm not overly optimistic that they will necessarily help, but for those people who feel that it's a good way to voice their opposition, that's certainly one option for you.
It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.